Hey, everybody. How are you? Welcome into another edition of Let's Talk Wheels here on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. My name is Matt Peralta, alongside Mike Herzing. How are you, Mike? What's going on?
Oh, it's been great. A little dreary this week, but man, there's a lot of stuff going on in the automotive industry. Man, the Hummer is out. They got a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah, our news and notes, we're going to start talking about this new GMC Hummer that has come out, the electrified Hummer.
Yep.
From 2022, you're going to get this, a premium off-road vehicle that's got a price tag that's not cheap,
no,
but it can do some pretty cool things. So.
Yeah, but it's up there with the Land Rover, you know, perhaps, and some of the Mercedes G-Wagons and stuff like that. So it's, but you know what? There people are ready to buy them.
Yeah, they really are. So we'll get to that coming up. We'll also talk to Lawrence Chow from Mazda. Mike's got an interview with him about what's happening with Mazda and the first responders as they're trying to help people who have been helping us here during the COVID-19 crisis. So we got Lawrence Chow coming on the program, automotive reviews as well here on this edition of Let's Talk Wheels.
Yeah.
But, you know, Mike, what's interesting about where we are right now, productivity is picking up, right, across the country for automotives? Right?
All around. I mean, the trick is automotive business has been ready to go. The problem is they haven't had any supply. You know, the sales dropped 30 or 40%, but the production dropped 100%. So it's ready to go. As soon as they get these stuff starting trickling in, the dealers are starting to get decent vehicles in stock. We got new vehicles coming out. It's going to be back to, not say normal, but close.
Right.
By
do you feel like 2021 quarter. we'll see numbers that were,
yeah,
you know, similar to what 2020 first quarter were like?
It may even be better, seeing as how a lot of people put off stuff that they really needed a vehicle, and they put it off, and they'll, you know, by next year they'll feel good enough about everything that they'll be ready to pull the trigger.
Yeah, that's what I've noticed here in Vegas. A lot of temporary plates from new vehicle sales.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a lot of new vehicles being purchased. I was driving behind a brand new Toyota Supra last night, and just seen a lot of people who have, at least here in Vegas, who, you know, as we've come out of the quote unquote shutdown, where now people are buying new vehicles, which is really, really good to see and really important to get our economy back to going and get people on the road buying vehicles and helping these dealerships who have been dormant for a couple of months now. So let's get into that coming up next. Our news note segment will look at a road in Sweden that I'm fascinated by that could come to America one day. And then obviously the Hummer we'll get to. All that and much more coming up here on this edition of Let's Talk Wheels on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. It's Let's Talk Wheels here on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. Mike Herzing and Matt Peralta. Time for our news note segment. A couple of cool things in the automotive space to start with, Mike. And let's get right with this GMC Hummer.
Mm-hmm.
Price tag of $113,000. However, it sounds like this thing can do quite a lot.
Yeah, but it's also, they say it's going to be, they're going to have an SUV and a pickup truck version. And it says here, the most expensive factory-built pickup truck in history.
Wow.
But everybody sold out. They sold out for the year. 1,000 horsepower.
Let's talk about this for a second. 1,000 horsepower on road with the ability to go 0 to 60 in 3 seconds.
Yeah, which is like,
do we need that?
Corvette or no, they just trying to show off. It's like Ford saying I've got the F-150 pulling 1 million pounds, you know. Okay, so what? I mean, how is it really going to be off road and how's it going to be
Well, they're claiming a 350-mile range.
Right. Of course, that's best-case scenario, not cold outside, you know, no air conditioning, no heating on, you know, and driving it stop and go. I mean, so you've got to understand that. So my guess is 300 maybe.
Because if you're talking about that type of speed and you're hammering it.
Right. Well, I'm sure that there's going to be a sport mode and an eco mode, okay? And this is
right.
going to be an eco mode where it's, you know, it's slug. You know, but
because remember, I mean, if look, I'm 43 and obviously I'm old enough to remember. I know, right? But I'm old enough to remember when the Hummer came out and it got like 6 miles to the gallon.
I remember having an H2, and I had it for the press car to drive for a week to do a road test. And I'd said, man, the miles, I never got the miles per gallon, the average, over into double digits. It was always 9 miles a gallon. And the last day, I was driving on a really smooth road at 55, and I got the average to go for the week to go to 10 miles per gallon. That was the most.
And that was an H2.
7 and 8. That's
the H2. That was an H2, not H1.
Yeah, you're right. That's what I said. That's why I went back and corrected myself. It was an H2. And the H3 wasn't a bad vehicle.
No, it wasn't.
It just had that five-cylinder. By the time they put the V6 in it, and it actually ran pretty good, it was too late for Hummer, and it's a shame because if they had the 3-liter diesel back then and stuck it in either one of those vehicles, that would have been a that they would have kept the brand alive. But they just didn't have the 10-speed. They didn't have the 3-liter diesel. It's a shame. They could have put them on a diet, and they could have, you know, lightened them up.
So how do you think the Hummer brand, I mean, deciding to keep it and not rename it something else, what's the decision behind there to say, okay, we're going to call this a GMC Hummer and not call it something else?
No, because the Hummer's a good name, and it's got a great name, and it's got, you know, a reputation for being reliable, and you can't kill it, and the military used it, and all that good stuff. So,
but this is nothing, looks nothing like that, though.
I understand that, but that doesn't matter. The name is still means something. It's like when Ford had the name Taurus, that was for years the number one vehicle in the U.S., and then they dropped the name. Alan Mulally comes on as CEO, mm-hmm. and says, oh, you guys are crazy. You need to bring this name back. It's a popular name. The Hummer, you know, the people that owned them really liked them. And it just, and but the environmentalists hated it because it got 10 miles a gallon, yep. or whatever, and they just hated the whole thing about it. But they never saved any weight on it. They could have done so much more if they had the brand right now, even without the electric. But I think mm-hmm. the electric is going to be great. I hope they make a hybrid version, but they probably won't. But it's going to be, this platform is a great platform that GM has. This is all new technology.
Explain this to me, though. Explain the three motors. So it's got one motor up front mm-hmm. and two spinning the rear axle,
right.
which is going to produce the 1,000 horsepower.
Right.
Three engines? Are you asking for trouble there?
Three motors. A lot of vehicles will have four motors. Okay. That's not a problem. It's actually easier to control and things like that. But, you know, to get 350 miles range, it's not going to get it at 1,000 horsepower mode. It's not. You know what I mean?
Right.
But it's pretty cool. I mean, it's going to be able to have traction control. You may have only one motor really pushing the vehicle at one time. It loses mm-hmm. traction. The other one kicks in. If it loses more traction, the front one kicks in, which is kind of like they have, you know, right now with four-wheel drive. You know, the automatic four-wheel drive that a lot of vehicles will stay in. It doesn't even go into four-wheel drive until it needs to. It could be that it may even default to front wheel drive, just one motor pulling both front wheels, and that may be how it is in it. And then when you want to go off road, it brings in the rears. So it's got a lot of cool stuff. This new battery pack that GM has is going to put it all over the place.
Well, the charge too. I mean, it has the ability to charge 100 miles of range in just 10 minutes.
Right.
Which is really, really cool. And I mean, I was watching Shark Tank over the weekend last weekend, and they had a company in my neck of the woods where I'm from in Boston that is actually in the charging space, and they're developing mm-hmm. essentially you lease this charging station from right. them. It's portable,
right.
but they ultimately want to have the idea of putting it inside of vehicles where they can have it be small enough where you actually can just charge your car no matter where you are. You just stop and charge it. So it's like a quick charge station, but in your trunk, you can do that. If we're going to get there that fast, if we're going to have those technologies on the market in the next 4 to 5 years, then we're going to be in a whole different world when it comes to electric. It'll come fast.
Absolutely.
So it was really cool. I was like, oh my gosh. Okay. It's like, so if we're already there, it was designed for like a AAA or somebody to come out and charge your car if your car ran out of
it's
juice.
It's like the extra battery you get for your phone.
Right.
I've got this extra battery, and you just connect it up to the charge port.
Stick it in your trunk, and if you've got the ability to charge, like carrying around gasoline, but it's not the explosiveness of gasoline, but if you have a battery pack in your car that gives you 100 miles in 10 minutes in case you ran out of juice, I mean, it changes the world. I mean, because then you're not worrying about calculations, and, you know, hey, if I'm you know, off by 20 miles, I've got the extra 100 miles in my trunk to get me somewhere
or
safe.
If I want to go, all of a sudden, I realize I'm on the road, I was going to stop at this hotel, the weather got bad or something, I'm going to go farther, and you can't. Because there's
snowstorms, rainstorms, yeah.
There's another story, we talked about this before, about the range extenders that Ford made one that's going to fit into the bed of a pickup truck. Mazda's got one that's a little rotary engine, which is tiny, and it's going to, for their SUV, the MX-30 or CUV, and it's basically going to act as a range extender, which is kind of like the old Chevy Volt was.
I am sure
that there's going to be a boatload of companies that are going to come out with these little range extenders. You stick them in the back of the vehicle, mm-hmm. and you can charge your battery with it or even run the wheels. I'm sure it'll be just where it charges the battery. Just go in to hook into the charge port. And it'll charge your batteries for you. And or even let run the wheels. You know what I mean? And
well,
so I think,
I mean, I'm excited because, look, I had a 2008 RX-8.
Oh, those are great, weren't they?
I loved it. Oh. I mean, I was so dumb, though, because this is back in my, 12 years ago when I was single and I was doing whatever I wanted to whenever I wanted it. I was driving a Mazda RX-8 in Omaha, Nebraska.
Oh, well, there
and,
you go.
And, well, yeah, really fun, except it can't in the snow.
Oh.
I was doing, I literally did a 360 on the highway with snow tires, by the way,
whoops.
With that vehicle.
That so couldn't be how you drive, though, could it, Matt?
It could be a little bit how I drive, but it's also because the vehicle's got a lot of power in the rear, and it's not really meant for the snow.
Yeah, and it was so smooth. You could turn the thing up to 8,000 RPMs, and it was just, you could balance a nickel on the dash. It was just amazing.
I really could. I flew with that thing, man, whipping through gears. I had so much fun road trips on that vehicle. So it's cool to see the rotary engine coming back because the RX-8 was discontinued in 2012. So it's nice to see them come back with the rotary engine and, the non-piston engine and kind of have this opportunity here for electric.
Yes.
So I'm really psyched to see Mazda
that. The Wankel or rotary engines work best at a constant speed, like a generator, okay? That's how they work best. They get the best fuel economy. They get the best emissions. And everything works out best at a constant speed. Mm. And so this is right up the alley. I mean, this is like a generator. I'm sure they'll come out with a line of Wankel or rotary generators. How smooth it would be? Because it's just one speed. And I love to bring the rotary back. I love those engines.
Okay, so there's one more thing I want to get to here in the news notes before I get to the automotive reviews and Lawrence Chow from Mazda. So in Sweden, I sent you this story that, and you said you've seen it before. I'd never seen it before, but in Sweden they are developing a road in which a truck, a Mack truck or large transportation vehicle, has the ability to charge its battery while driving.
Right.
And it has a connectivity where basically you're driving and you line it up and it gets connected to this port on the road and you're driving and you're recharging the battery while you're driving. The first thing that popped in my head, Mike, when I saw this was my dream of having a only lane for Mack trucks.
Yes.
And they just go there and that's it. And I hearken back to the new truck that's being built by here in Vegas, that they're building and having the electric Mack trucks for Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
Or they transmit. So I was like, my gosh, this could work. If you had a lane that was just for electric vehicles or electric trucks, you essentially could have autonomously driven trucks, could you not? I mean,
would you really need a human being? And a lot of it has to do, right now they've got parking lots where you can pull into your parking space. And it's got wireless charging.
Yep, here in Vegas we got that, yeah.
Okay, well, think of it as wireless charging as you're driving down the road. So it's not a bad idea. It depends on how much power you lose with all the resistance and everything. But and also having to build the road with this in it. Maybe you can add it later, but it's a great idea. And I've heard it before, and they just haven't been able to make it work. But now it sounds like they are testing it, and it's really going to be cool. But the problem with an 18-wheeler, or they call it a Class 8 truck, is it takes to go 500-600 miles, which is their normal range, 700 miles. You're talking 15 tons of batteries.
Whew.
And you only get to tow 80 tons. So it all comes off the amount. 80,000 pounds, excuse me, not 80 tons. 80,000 pounds was 40 tons. That's 30,000 pounds out of the 80. So that drops down how much you can carry. Now, if they can put smaller batteries on it because they're constantly being recharged, think how great that would be.
Okay, now that makes a lot of sense.
Then you got to think about that. So then, but I don't know if it's going to be like my old slot cars that had the two little wires that would hanging down that made the power. I remember that when I was a kid, but I think the wireless charging thing is the way it is. As long as you don't lose too much energy when it's charging, I think it's great.
Yeah, it looked really wild, and I kind of was like, my goodness, if we're able to develop roads that have the ability to charge, and you start with our transportation industry first, start with our shipping industry first. I mean, my goodness, that could change things dramatically, and then you free up the batteries for other people and for the drivers, and I think that's really, and eventually you would eventually become part of the roadway for everybody. But to start the way that they're doing it over in Sweden, I think it's great.
And then also, don't forget, they'll have these wires in the road or some these signals in the road, which means the truck, their lane divergence system can follow it, which will make it more of an autonomous vehicle.
Great. Which is, you don't even really need a human inside of it, which is kind of scary, but maybe not.
Well, that also means that the guy can be in there and maybe not make paying 100% attention. Right. There's no cut down on dozing off, cut down on accidents. I think it's a win-win-win situation. We can afford
it. I agree.
It.
All right, coming up next, our automotive reviews, and then Lawrence Chow from Mazda is coming in as we continue on this edition of Let's Talk Wheels on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. What's up, guys? How are you? Welcome back to Let's Talk Wheels. I am Matt Peralta. How are you? And you guys get a double dose of me here on this segment of Let's Talk Wheels. Hopefully, you've been enjoying the news and notes segment. Mike Herzing's got his interview coming up here in the next segment. But first, let me tell you about, well, I got two beasts, two big boys to review. Let's start with the 2020 Toyota Land Cruiser. This thing is enormous. Now, for the 2020 year, there aren't any major changes to this vehicle. So, if you remember what the sixth generation of the Land Cruiser looks like, that was done way back in 2008. This thing is getting long in the tooth, but it's still an absolute beast. $85,000 sticker on this thing. It is capable upon capable upon capable. There is nothing this thing really can't do. I took it for some light off-roading here in Vegas. Nothing too crazy, but it's just enormous. I mean, it is so comfortable. The ride on this thing is like, well, it's kind of like on a cloud. You're just up so high. You can see everything. I kind of compare it to being in a tank. Like, it's just, you feel like nothing can hurt you in this vehicle. Like, nothing can be in your blind spots. You see everything coming. You see anybody who may be pulling out in front of you. You see anybody coming up from behind. You just have this superior spot looking around, looking down on everyone. This thing has capable towing, over 8,000 pounds, and it's got your off-road hardware, locking center differential, which is really nice. Look, this thing is a luxury, powerful SUV tank. It is got the luxury three rows in the back, so you got, you know, just tons of space in the back. Look, if you are someone who likes an old school SUV, you're going to like this vehicle, okay? It doesn't have a lot of the bells and whistles that a modern vehicle has. It doesn't have, like, you know, your pop-up display. It doesn't have the telematics that you might expect. It doesn't have all sorts of the, you know, the bells and the whistles that some of these, you know, an Audi Q7 might have or a Land Rover Discovery. Some people like that. If you just want a nuts and bolts beast, this thing is for you, man. It can move, it can tow, it can get around. And if you're not looking for the frilly stuff, if you're not looking for kind of the tech packages and you just want a beast of a truck, vehicle, SUV, this is very much up in your alley. And you know, the one thing about the Toyotas that I've talked about quite a bit is just their interiors need to be redone. And the Land Cruiser is no different. It needs to be redone. They don't right now have plans to do it because I don't think they really have to. I mean, they don't need to. The vehicle just is such a great seller. And Toyota's brand loyalty is so high. People just absolutely love this thing. And they can say, you know, you can have an Infiniti or you can take a Porsche or you take an Audi. I don't care. Give me my Land Cruiser. Give me this thing that's solid, capable, dependable, and will go anywhere through any snowstorm or through the mountains or really anything you ask this thing to do, this thing can do. And it's got, you know, okay fuel economy. I wouldn't say it's good fuel economy. It's okay. You know, it's a little bit herky-jerky. I thought, you know, when you're, you know, pressing on the brake, it can come up a little short sometimes. And, you know, it's just, you lay the third seat down. You got tons and tons of cargo space in the back. You know, one of the things people are going to say is if you're driving a vehicle that's like $85,000, you're not worried about fuel economy, which I probably would agree with, right? But this is something where if you've never driven a Land Cruiser, I would definitely go and check it out. If you have driven or owned a Toyota Land Cruiser, you know what this thing is. It is the 2020 is just an updated kind of version, nicer version, some bells and whistles, kind of, you know, some couple more USB ports and some wireless charging that you've got. The wireless charging is kind of odd. where you put it, like you put your phone away, like you stick your, for wireless charging, you kind of like, you put your phone in this little area that charges your phone, but you don't like to see your phone while your phone's charging. It's a little weird. I know what they were trying to add, like they're trying to make it a little bit more tech savvy, but they end up, I don't know, doing a little bit, maybe too much for it. But look, if you like the Land Cruiser, you're going to love the 2020 Toyota Land Cruiser. It's just the same vehicle that has been selling and selling and selling. Capability up high, power, 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 towing capability, off-road capable, does everything you need it to do, really. I mean, it does everything you need it to do, just very, very impressive. It's an absolute beast of a vehicle, and if you like big, strong, very capable trucks and capable SUVs, the Land Cruiser is definitely something you should check out. Now, the other vehicle that I want to review today, and this is not the opposite, but it's a little bit of a different ride. The 2020 Volkswagen Atlas. I really like this vehicle. The Atlas has impressed me. It is very big inside. It is very comfortable. It's got a great 235 horsepower engine, and you can get it upgraded to a V6, which I like a lot. It doesn't tow all that much, okay? It's about 5,000 pounds towing. I don't think you're really going to get this vehicle for towing, but interior is gorgeous. I love the exterior. It looks great. The grille is great. You sit down, you got some nice sight lines. The tech packages for Volkswagens are improved. I'll give them credit. They have improved here, and they've done some good things, upgrading it, making it a little bit more easy to figure out. I mean, the technology trim is gives you the SE technology trim, gives you the 20-inch wheels. The SEL premium trim adds 21-inch wheels. The telematics, the CarMax telematics is standard. I still don't love it. I'm still kind of coming around here a little bit on it, but I mean, fuel economy-wise, it's okay. It's about 26 miles per gallon is what I was getting. And if you have the upgraded engine, maybe a little bit less than that, maybe 24 that you're getting, but not horrible. It's a very safe vehicle. You've got your automatic braking with pedestrian detection, your rear view camera, which is very bright, very crisp, blind spot monitoring, and your rear cross traffic, which is really nice. And if you're looking for technology, I mean, it's got a 6.5-inch touchscreen, which is nice. Apple CarPlay, Android Auto, which I'm always very, I'm looking for. You got your in-vehicle Wi-Fi, your Bluetooth connectivity. They need more USB ports. All these vehicles, if I could ever talk to, I mean, you got to get more USB ports. They've got about 3 in this vehicle. You need more than that. Personally, I think you need more than that. I think you need a bunch, personally. I think you need like 4, 5, 6 of these things now with all the different tech stuff that we got, of all the different things that people are looking at. I think, you know, it's important to have as many USB ports as possible just for charging and for using with the telematics system. But so you aren't going to really go off-roading with this vehicle. It's not the most powerful of vehicles, but it looks nice. It rides nice. And it has a very nice finish to it. I mean, I was impressed with it. It's definitely something I could own. I could drive. I mean, I think that this vehicle, because of where they are price-wise, I mean, you can get it in the lower 30s. If you want to really kind of update it and go with a bunch of different trim levels, you can get it. You know, the SEL Premium is going to run you close to $40,000, $45,000. But every time I have one of these vehicles, every time we have an Atlas or an Atlas Sport, my wife's always very impressed, and she's always like, yeah, we could own this vehicle. And I would agree. You know, it gives her what she likes with this kind of a heavier vehicle, and it's got the third row in the back. It's got the things that you're looking at. I mean, everybody has this third row, right? I'm not saying I would have, you know, other than like my six-year-old back there, it's not a ton of room in the third row, but it does enough. I just think it's a vehicle where under $40,000, Volkswagen's in the SUV market, and they're doing a really good job in the SUV market. I'm very impressed with it. I could definitely see myself owning a Volkswagen SUV in the near future, and maybe they could update a little bit or upgrade a little bit when it comes to where we are here for the SUV capability off-roading for Volkswagen. But light off-roading, it takes care of it. You know, it's got the third row, which is nice if you want it. Good cargo space in the back, nice interior, good sight lines, comfortable ride, good tech packages, a lot of standard safety features in this vehicle, and you're under $40,000 as well. So I liked it a lot. I definitely think this is a vehicle, if you haven't gotten behind the wheel of a Volkswagen SUV, I definitely recommend you go ahead and check it out and do so, because I think you'll enjoy it a lot. I think you'll find that you may be pleasantly surprised get by the wheel of a 2020 Volkswagen Atlas. I was very nice. I had the 2.0 TS4 Motion is what I had for the Volkswagen Atlas, which I had a week of, and I really liked it. Didn't want to give it back once we had the week up for this vehicle. All right, we got more to come here on Let's Talk Wheels. Mike Herzing is going to be alongside here in just 1 second with an interview for you, so don't move. We got a lot more to come on this edition of Let's Talk Wheels on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network.
Okay, folks, as we were talking earlier in the show, we have Lawrence Chow from Mazda. Mazda's done some really, really good things besides their vehicles. They've done some good things for all of this COVID stuff and all this pandemic. They have really stepped up. And Lawrence, how you doing, buddy?
I'm great, Mike. Thanks for the privilege of being with you today.
All right, Lawrence Chow. Tell you what, tell us about this Mazda Cares program and the Mazda Heroes and how it's all wrapped together.
Yeah, well, I think maybe the best place for me to start is to talk about the Essential Car Care program that started back in mid-April. You know, so at the start of this whole pandemic outbreak, you know, we saw the whole world, you know, really kind of changing before our eyes. I mean, businesses were obviously being shut down with stay-at-home orders. The effort to flatten the curve and give hospitals relief until more ventilators became available was in full force. I mean, it was clear that there were people in the healthcare community that were still putting themselves at great risk for the betterment of others. And this was in spite of short or insufficient personal protective equipment to keep themselves safe. And so, you know, we were looking at the world around us and what was going on. And, you know, we wanted to see what we could do that would reflect what we believe in as an organization, what we could do uniquely as an automotive company. And as it happens often, you know, some of the best ideas come from those who are closest to their local communities. In our case, you know, it was one of our Mazda dealers. You know, we were really inspired by what one of our dealers was doing in his local community by offering oil changes to any healthcare employee, regardless of the make of their vehicle. So we felt like this was exactly the type of effort that we could expand to a national scale to support and recognize those saving lives during the pandemic. So we partnered with our dealers nationally and launched a free oil change and enhanced car cleaning service to all healthcare workers across the country, regardless of the brand that they drove.
Sure.
And it was really exciting. I mean, we had a tremendous response from our dealers. We had about 86% of our dealers nationally in the 9 states that comprise the Gulf region that I'm directly responsible for. We had 93% of our dealers participating.
Wow.
So just about everybody, you know, got in on this deal. And our dealers were really, you know, the true heroes during this program. They too were putting themselves at risk to honor this offer. And we had tremendous take. I mean, we had over 50,000 services performed nationally. Over 60% of them were actually non-Mazda vehicle owners. So quite frankly, we were just very humbled by what healthcare heroes were doing during this challenging time. And we were just proud as an automotive company to be able to do what we could to support those who were serving their fellow human.
You know, that is kind of wild. I mean, but think about it. If you're a first responder, you're, you know, let's say you're in the medical field and you're stuck here and you're stuck there, and you may just drive home to work, you don't have time to go take your car in to get it serviced. And the fact that you guys are taking care of that for people that didn't even have a Mazda, I bet you they're going to buy a Mazda now, right?
Yeah, I mean, we absolutely have maintained contact with a lot of those customers that took us up on that initial offer that were not Mazda owners, and some of them have really been delighted by the experience they've gotten. We had one story, and just to share something with you very quickly, we had a Mazda owner, actually, who was a healthcare employee. I believe that she was a nurse, and she had just had a regular service appointment scheduled for an oil change at the dealership, and so she didn't know anything about the offer when she came in. And when the dealership told her that they were going to provide the service, you know, complimentary to her for being a healthcare employee, and she found out about it, I mean, she literally came to tears. And I mean, it wasn't a big thing, but I think it was really symbolic of a tough time where people were really putting themselves on the line for others, and the just the show of gratitude, just a very small thing like that, really made a huge difference. And so it's great stories like that that make us feel really good about being able to do, you know, things like this for people that are just extraordinarily deserving.
Well, you know, you're exactly right. And, you know, the trick is, if you're one of those people that are at an essential business or essential job, and and you're a little bit nervous about doing this. You hear all this, you know, doom and gloom and all this terrible things and people getting, you're around people getting sick or you're helping people. And it's kind of nice to have somebody say, hey, let me help you. Even if you don't have one of our cars, we're going to help you anyway. And have the dealers come by and pick them up and drop them off and do all the things they're doing. That is so cool because these people were overworked and underpaid. And it's kind of nice to have somebody give them an attaboy.
Absolutely. And in such a critical time when we need them so much. And again, as a car company, look, we're not necessarily saving lives in the same way. I mean, obviously, you know, we're providing safe vehicles and we're trying to take care of the people that are our owners. But, you know, to do just something different that's very relevant with what's going on in the world today, I mean, it just makes us feel good that we can do something unique as an automotive company.
Well, you know, no kidding. Mazda's always been Matt and I were just talking earlier on you know, other part of the show about the fact that Mazda has this new rotary range extender they're working on. And Matt was talking about he used to have an RX-8 and he wished he still had it and all the cool stories we had. And I used to work at a Mazda dealer back when the rotary pickup days. And I remember when the rotaries first came out and how awesome they were. And Mazda's just been on the forefront. They got the new SkyActiv engines, which gets unbelievable fuel economy at virtually no emissions. And then now they've got, you know, they're doing this. The company's always been innovative, and they've always had cars that are fun to drive.
Well, I appreciate that very much, Mike. And yeah, I mean, it is exciting. And you know, working for this company, I've been here for about 15 years now. Mm. It really is fun to be in a place where we really do take the path less traveled often. Yeah. And, you know, we really try and take on a challenger mindset. And you know, that really brings us to where we are now relative to this Mazda Heroes Honoring the Human Spirit program, you know, that we've put out. And I know you wanted to talk about this a little bit, too.
Sure.
You know, the pandemic, obviously, at this point, has continued much longer than anyone would have wanted. And, you know, after this essential car care program concluded, we continue to hear a lot of stories, you know, from people mm-hmm. that were doing incredible things to support others and uplift their communities with their selfless contributions. You know, we've heard examples of teachers reinventing themselves and going to extraordinary lengths to deliver learning in new and different ways. We heard about people finding ways to bring meals to those who are having a hard time putting food on the table. Or we've heard about those offering support and counseling to people struggling to cope with the anxieties and pressures caused by the pandemic. And so, you know, there was a lot of really great stuff going on out there, you know, outside of even the immediate healthcare community that we were able to recognize before. And, you know, again, we looked at this and we said, you know, maybe there's another way that we could support and recognize mm-hmm. those heroes, but it reflects our brand values and it's in a way that only an automotive company could. And it just so happens that, coincidentally, this is Mazda's 100th anniversary this year. And, you know, like for everyone, this year has played out a little differently than how we would have wanted to celebrate that 100th yeah. anniversary. I mean, we even developed a special version 100th anniversary edition MX-5 Miata well. To commemorate this historic milestone. But given the circumstances, you know, and everything going on this year, you know, we thought actually the best way that we could celebrate was to give to those who are giving so much of themselves. So what we are doing is we are honoring 50 individuals as part of this Mazda Heroes Honoring the Human Spirit mm-hmm. who have supported others during this difficult time by giving them a Mazda MX-5 Miata 100th anniversary special edition vehicle. So if there's anybody out there that's listening to this, if they themselves or someone they know is helping their community, mm-hmm. you know, we very much encourage them to share their story on MazdaUSA.com by October 25th for a chance to be a Mazda hero. You know, we're honoring 50 of these individuals across the country. And all you got to do is just go and submit a one-minute video. Anyone can nominate a local hero. And this hero can be anyone. So while, again, we recognize healthcare workers initially with our essential car care program, this right. Mazda Heroes program will recognize anyone, just like the examples I mentioned before.
That is awesome. How do we do that?
Yeah, so all you really have to do is go on to Mazda USA. There's
okay.
a form to fill out. And then you just have to submit a 1-minute YouTube video. Awesome. If you don't have a YouTube account, you can go to YouTube and set one up very easily. And, you know, you just have to submit it by the website and have that in by October 25th. So there's still time. And then, you know, we'll be announcing our honorees right around December 2nd.
Awesome. All right. Now, Lawrence, tell you what, I know this 100th anniversary thing, you don't look a day over 90, but I can tell you what, I will be flogged and berated forever if I don't let you talk a little bit, just a couple minutes, about the new 100th anniversary Miata.
Yeah. It's a really cool vehicle, to just put it plainly. There's a really great background story behind it. And, you know, because it's such a big milestone, our 100th anniversary special edition MX-5 Miata was inspired by the legacy R360 Coupe. So this R360 Coupe that was born in the 1960s was Mazda's first passenger vehicle and actually can be said to be the origin of Mazda's development philosophy. So it really stood as a symbol of our dream. And just like we were talking about before, it really embodied that challenger spirit of Mazda. So we took a lot of visual cues out of that R360 Coupe from back when and tried to put them into this special anniversary 100th edition. And so the exterior is a snowflake white Pearl Mica.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a red Napa leather seat interior with matching red accents. It's got 100-year 1920 to 2020 badging on the front fender. It's going to be on the floor mats, and we've got a special logo in the center wheel cap, as well as embossed logos on the headrest and on the key fob, as well as it will be presented in a very special edition box. So it's a very, very cool. Otherwise, you know, in terms of the vehicle itself, it is very much based on a MX-5 GT trim, and it very much is a Miata, just like the other Miatas, you know. So yeah, in terms of, you know, absolutely paying off the 900-year-old concept of Jinba Itai, or horse and rider as one, it really is a Miata through and through. So it still has that near-perfect 50-50 weight distribution. You know, it still has that incredible connection between driver and vehicle. You know, lightweight, but still good power. And from a design perspective, I think with this thing going down the road, will frankly just be one of the best darn-looking vehicles that you see out there. So really, really fun, and we're excited that we're able to, you know, honor these very deserving people with such a special edition vehicle for us.
Well, I know that I hope this has a bigger engine than the R360 with the 356cc twin cylinder, but because I've seen those vehicles before. But I can tell you what, you guys have always done a great job. I mean, from day one, everybody looked at Mazda, and it's like the Miata going, you know what, this is like a British, you know, sports car, but it actually runs and the lights work. And so, you know, and it doesn't break down. So it's the coolest thing. Folks, if you haven't seen the MX-5 Miata, you've got to look at it. It's really great. I'm sure you can go to MazdaUSA.com. But we're running out of time. Lawrence, thanks for joining Let's Talk Wheels today.
Yeah, thank you very much again for the invitation. And, yeah, appreciate the time.
All right, folks, we got more Let's Talk Wheels right here on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network.
What's up, guys? It's Let's Talk Wheels here on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. Matt Peralt back with you. Hopefully you enjoyed that interview with the one and only Mr. Mike Herzing. If you guys want even more audio, even more information, Jeremy Barenbaum joins the program from Classic.com on the podcast each and every week. Go and subscribe to the podcast. There's a couple different ways to do it. Apple Podcasts or Spotify, searching Let's Talk Wheels. You can go to sportsmapradio.com and click on podcasts and scroll down and find Let's Talk Wheels, or just look around on the internet by just searching Let's Talk Wheels and you'll find it. Subscribe where you get your podcasts and you'll be able to get us, and then the extra audio with Jeremy Barenbaum. If you like classic cars, if you're into restorations, if you're into buying and selling classic cars, Jeremy and Mike do a great job every week with some extra audio for you every single week here on the program and on the podcast. So really, really good stuff with that. If you've not gone to our Facebook page, please do so. Let's Duck Wheels on Facebook and send Mike a note. Any questions, we will answer it on a future edition of Let's Duck Wheels. So definitely check it out. And also on Instagram by searching Let's Duck Wheels, you can go and find us with all pictures and whatnot, including a Halloween Volkswagen I was driving this week that I'll review in a future episode of Let's Talk Wheels. Same place, same time, next week. It is Let's Talk Wheels right here on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network.
Hey, folks, welcome to the Let's Talk Wheels podcast. Mike Herzing here, Matt Perrault, Jeremy Barenbaum from Classic.com. Jeremy, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. How are you, Mike?
As always, we love to talk to you guys about what's happening on the classic cars, and we're going to talk about my adventure I've had the last couple weeks looking for a classic truck. You know, some of it really cool, some of it very frustrating. I went and looked at some vehicles, and, you know, God, they're expensive. They've gotten stupid expensive, Jeremy. I mean, it's nuts.
Yeah, I mean, and we talked about it before you went out and started looking and stuff, and I'm still kind of blown away by some of the prices you're sending me for what you're actually getting on some of these cars. It's kind of tough bullet to swallow sometimes, right?
You know, it is, but I've got a lot of questions. The other day we were mentioning different vehicles, and I got a couple of emails in from folks. And, you know, some of the questions are about a Ford unibody pickup truck from the 60s. When did they make a unibody pickup truck?
Yeah, so 61 to 63, Ford decided that they would try and do something a little bit different. And I don't know if I would call it total unibody because, you know, it still has a frame like a normal car.
Sure.
But the truck bed is one solid piece into the bed of the – or the cab of the truck. And that was a new design for 61 for Ford. But it didn't seem to last long. They made it on a couple different versions of the truck. But, you know, I think the idea was, you know, it was a little bit easier to build, less welds, less stamps that need to be made or patterns that need to be made.
Sure.
But I think overall, as a truck, I think it was kind of a bit of a failure.
Yeah, I would think because, I mean, you would want the bed and the cab different because sometimes you put a heavy load back there. Back when people were they weren't thinking of them as classics, they were just trucks. You put a big load in there, and I would think that it would make a difference where people, I'm trying to think how to put this. I would say it's a difference where people, you know, could cause damage to the body. I mean, I would think that between the bed and the cab, it might make a crack or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I was doing a bunch of reading on this because we had chatted about it during the week a little bit. And one thing I found that was interesting was, yeah, when you put a heavy load in the bed of the truck, it would actually cause the body to curve or distort a little bit. And there were stories of when these trucks would go over a train track or something, you know, where the body would twist. Sometimes the door would pop open, or sometimes it would actually crunch closed so you couldn't open the door afterwards.
Oh,
so,
that's good.
You know, and I think Ford also realized, you know, that this design wasn't the best thing because they only offered it in their two-wheel drive cars, saying that basically the four-wheel drive trucks cause too much twist and the body needs to be a little bit more rigid for that.
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. And some of this stuff, it's just so different, you know, but we have a lot of people that were asking me about that because it is kind of odd. They'd only made them for a few years. And I remember when Mercury made a truck too. Remember that?
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, you know, everyone, every year Ford, Chevy, they're trying to, you know, try something new, a new design. You know, this was kind of styled towards people that wanted a truck but aren't working on the farms. You know, this was dressed up. It had seat belts, mirrors, all that sort of thing. And then you'd hear of people buying it for their farm still, and they'd order it without the seat belts, without the mirrors, because, you know, they just needed it as a work farm truck.
You know, you're right. And there's just so many people out there that that are taking these trucks and just and you know, really resurrecting them or just, you know, helping them survive. And I think it's great to see, you know, basically a window into the past. But some of these trucks, to be honest with you, for years, I mean, I had a 69 F-100, which now I wish I hadn't sold. But, you know, it had the gas tank behind the seat. People now will move them under the body, you know, where they should be, you know, where the frame is supporting them and things like that, you know, kind of help guarding them a little bit, protecting them. They're putting decent brakes on them. They're putting the better transmissions and things like that.
Yeah, if you think about it, you know, we're kind of spoiled by today's trucks and, you know, and what they can do and how versatile they are. But, you know, back in the day, these things were meant for going 20 to 35 miles on farm roads, mm-hmm. carrying stuff, and that was about it. So, you know, all of a sudden you want to put them on the freeway and get them to stop well and start well. You end up having to do a lot of different things to these cars that weren't originally done just because of now what you're trying to do with it.
You know, you're right, but I, you know, think about something when you get into the mid 70s and things like that. Remember when the speed limit was 55? I've seen a couple of vehicles with 85 mile an hour speed limits, speedometers. I've seen, you know, vehicles that, you know, that are geared. I mean, I looked at a truck just the other day. It was a GMC 77, and it was a camper special. Although it was 3/4 ton, it had a 1 ton running gear. But it had this 456 rear end or something like some of the gentleman told me that, but I don't know the exact numbers. But you know, it's in third gear before you make it a block. And so, you know, at 55 miles an hour, it's probably buzzing along pretty good. But when you go to 65 or 75, which is what you have
you're
to do
screaming.
To keep from being killed, it's screaming. You're right. You'd have to immediately have to change the ring and pinion and do those make those big changes. And it's just, you know, all of a sudden you're kind of going, wow, this is such a different era.
It totally. And then, you know, when you start getting into it, those are things like the gearing and stuff that you got to look at before you get into it. Because once you own it, $1,000 here, $1,500 there, now all of a sudden you're really starting to creep into the next level of car that you were possibly looking at anyways.
Well, you know, I've seen a lot of great vehicles. They're up in Michigan, Illinois, Delaware, you know, Minnesota, things like that, great looking vehicles. But, you know, they're going to have a lot of rust. And so that panics me a little bit. I saw a nice Bronco, like a 96 Bronco. It looked really good. And I emailed the guy, says it's got some rust. He goes, of course it does. It has lots. Oh, okay. And the trick
at least he's being honest.
Well, yeah. I mean, you don't want to have somebody say that. And like you told me, ask somebody, I saw one in Illinois, so it's actually southern Illinois, north of St. Louis. They're talking about, you know, could I get in it and drive it to Texas? And they're like, you know, the guy goes, well, you know, and it has rust bubbling out. Well, if it's got some rubbling up, that means there's a whole bunch more that is getting ready to bubble up. And so,
oh yeah, if you can see a little, there's definitely a lot. You know, right. It's one of those things that what you see on the surface is only the tip of the iceberg compared to what you got underneath the paint.
You know, you're absolutely right. And so it's so important to be able to go and have somebody look at it or even drive it for you. And this new site that you guys are just getting ready to bump up, you know, the first part of November, your site, bringing it back.
Yeah.
All this auction, the fact that you guys will have somebody inspect the vehicles is exactly what we need, because it's so scary spending $10,000 or $15,000 or $20,000, and when you get it, you're obviously going to be disappointed because the pictures look so good.
Yeah, and I mean, there's no replacement for putting your own eyes on a car when you're going to buy it, because nobody's going to look at it and think of it the same way that you are, right? But the benefit to at least having one person that's not, you know, that's a third party subjectively looking at your car, is at least you have someone that you can ask questions to that's not the owner. And hopefully they're going to give you the straightforward answer, right?
Right.
Because when you're looking at these cars, they're all over the country, and you're willing to do the shipping and take the time and go through the whole effort of buying something that's not local. You at least want to make sure what you're getting is what they say it is. And so by having a third party give a pre-purchase inspection, you're at least getting through some of the things that you might not get through speaking with the seller.
You know, exactly right. But also these people say, well, by the way, this is not, it's got some imperfection. It's a 40-year or 43 or 50-year-old truck, 50-year-old vehicle, you know, and so you got to understand it's not going to be like new. Okay, but wait a minute. It's sold for like $5,000 or $4,000 and you're charging 30 okay, it needs that $30,000. It needs to be pretty new. You know what I mean? To me.
Yeah.
And they're like,
I agree with you.
It's not true. And so it's just, you know, I don't want something that if I drive down the road and get a scratch or a rock comes up off of a truck and puts a ding in something or scratches the paint, I'm going to cry that night. But then again, I also don't want something that's going to fall apart. So
right. There's definitely, you know, that balance of knowing what you're going into, right? And if you know, hey, I got to fix this, I know I have to fix that, that's fine. I'm always fine with that, getting into it and knowing ahead of time. It's when you go look at something and then things start happening after the fact, right, that you didn't catch or you didn't see, and now all of a sudden you have these problems that you own it, it's your car, you've already bought into it.
Absolutely. Folks, Jeremy Birnbaum, classic.com, CLAQ. Now, Jeremy, the site's going to be up in a couple weeks. And
talking about a November 9th launch.
Okay.
So we'll have some cars for auction on classic.com.
Well,
and then if anyone listening has some cars they'd like to sell, you know, they can contact us at classic.com and we can help them through the process. Right now we're offering free PPIs and free photos of your car. So, you know, someone will come out and take beautiful photos of your car and help us list it on our website, and hopefully we can get it sold for you.
Now, that's got to cost a lot of money.
No, right now, to list that with us, there's no charge.
Well, see, that is a deal, Jeremy. That's why we all got to get on classic.com, and that'll work. Man, we're running out of time. What's your plans for the week?
I'm just hanging out. I got to, you know, I'm looking at a couple cars this week that we're going to be listing, a 57 T-Bird and some other cars, you know, so just hanging out.
That sounds good. All right, folks, the Jeremy Birnbaum, classic.com, and for just Let's Talk with Mike, but you can always tell me at letstalkwheels.com. I will work to get everybody to answer, probably be asking Jeremy about it. So remember, you can find us on our website, letstalkwheels.com, on Facebook, Instagram. Please tell your friends about the podcast and ask them to subscribe. We'd really, really appreciate it. So in closing, on behalf of Matt Perrault, Jeremy Birnbaum, our producer Jack McCraw, and myself, I want to thank everybody for joining us today on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio podcast. I'm Mike Herzing. As always, happy motoring.